The concept of a teenager is a relatively recent social invention created as the gap between youth and adulthood. Kind of started at the end of the Industrial Revolution. Matt Wolff's new documentary, Teenage, which is based on John Savage's book, Teenage, The Creation of Youth Culture, presents a collage of archival footage, recreated film portraits, and narrated diary excerpts that explore the origin of the teenager in America, England, and Germany. It opens today at the Landmark Sunshine Theater, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Matt Wolff to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
When and where did the teenage years begin to be viewed as a distinct and important part of life?
Like you said, I think it was with the end of child labor. You know, before you were either a kid, or then you went to work and you were an adult. But when that ended, there was this new second stage of life.
But there were also people who were going to school.
Yeah, they were going to school. But I think first youth was seen as a problem because these young people who weren't working were getting into trouble. They were called hooligans.
Mm-hmm. So what changed for teenagers and for parents and society as a whole? When did somebody actually come up with the word teenager?
The idea was percolating for a long time through the Second World War, but it was crystallized in 1945 with the publication of an article in the New York Times called the Teenage Bill of Rights. It was like a constitution or Ten Commandments for youth.
But, of course, we had teenagers before then, and they were already starting to be seen, as you say, as a distinct group after the end of child labor, which changes in different parts of the world.
But they were different types of adolescents, whether they were flappers or jitterbugs or subdebs. They hadn't yet been understood as this distinct social class.
And your film focuses on four different teenage approaches throughout the first half of the 20th century. There's a bright young thing from Britain in the 1920s, a member of the Hitler Youth, a German swing kid, and an African-American Boy Scout. How did you choose to concentrate on those particular individuals?
Well, my film is based on a book by John Savage, and those characters were profiled in his book, and I thought they formed a kind of composite portrait of the teenager that was about to be born.
Did they have any similarities?
Well, I think what ties them is that they were all rebelling, just on very different terms, whether it was through right-wing politics or flamboyant style. They were going against the values of their parents to imagine a different kind of future.
Well, one of the first narrations is an English boy who goes from being a factory worker and street kid to a Boy Scout. Were the Boy Scouts invented to some degree to help in this transition?
They were. It was an adult solution created by a British soldier named Baden Powell, but it had strong militaristic ideology, and really young people were being groomed for the First World War.
And it was in Britain originally, but it caught on even bigger in the United States?
Yes, it started in England, but it became a global phenomenon that, of course, still exists today.
And then, of course, in the film, as I mentioned, you also deal with the Hitler Youth. Were the Hitler Youth seen as an alternative to the Boy Scouts or a German version of the Boy Scouts?
Well, Germany has its own complex history of youth movements, most of which were youth-led. But, you know, with the rise of Hitler came a new organization that empowered youth to be at the center of his political plans, and youth were leading youth in this group.
In the Boy Scouts, you focus on somebody named Warren Wall.
Yes. In the 1940s, I wanted to bring to life the experience of an African-American youth. African-Americans were totally kind of left out of the official histories and newsreels of this era. So I recreated a portrait of a character who we found in a sociological study.
In all of these cases, or most of these cases, there are organized groups, but not the people of the Jazz Age, mm-hmm. the bright young things of Britain. I guess they were analogous to the people that F. Scott Fitzgerald was writing about in The Great Gatsby here.
Exactly. They were an elite party culture that kind of were the first people to define themselves as being young in a glamorous way.
But in the other groups, were adults behind the organizing? Was it a way for adults to kind of control things?
It was a mix. I think during the Great Depression, the government in America, for instance, created the CCC, an opportunity for young people to earn money and something that looked like the Boy Scouts. But a lot of the youth cultures I focus on were the invention of teenagers themselves.
In looking at the bright young things in Britain in the 1920s, you focus on Brenda Dean Paul, a rather tragic figure.
She's kind of like a Lindsay Lohan of the 1920s, one of the first young starlets who was the object of paparazzi intrigue, who was kind of torn down by the press and the public.
But she also came out of the upper classes, which
yes, absolutely.
Made her interesting on another level, almost like a Paris Hilton at the same time.
Exactly. We still have that aspirational and condemning attitude towards those types of youth.
And what role did she play in the 20s party scene in England?
She was an obscure figure in the Bright Young People movement. She was the object of kind of the gossip columns, but she got involved in drugs, and her downfall became a kind of public crucifixion.
And she lived into the 50s, but never really beat heroin, even though she tried more than once.
In and out of court, in jail, she was an addict for the rest of her life. And, you know, once she wasn't young anymore, the media and the public discarded her.
But was she one of the first people who became a darling of the tabloids?
She, totally, yes.
And
the
Bright Young... was that defining... what young people were like at that time?
Well, I think to be young was the style, and that people kind of loved to hate that group. They were a very elite and kind of selective crew.
Well, things change, of course, when the Depression hits the world.
Mm-hmm.
How did the Depression and economic tensions affect the lives of teens and the concept of teenagers in, well, we mentioned the Hitler Youth, but even before the Hitler Youth, there were all kinds of groups that were actually created by the kids themselves?
Yeah, and I mean, if anything, I think that the Great Depression kind of widened the generation gap even further, young people feeling like they were inheriting the problems of adults. And we saw all sorts of political movements manifesting of young people trying to imagine a different future.
And then along comes Hitler, and the Hitler Youth is a way of keeping these kids under control.
Yes, but what I was interested in reading the diaries of Melita Mashman, a Hitler Youth leader who later wrote about her experience, is that she was rebelling against her parents. She wanted a different path. And in Hitler and in the movement of the Hitler Youth, she saw an opportunity to be at the center of change.
So was she typical of people who joined the Hitler Youth, people who saw this as a rebellion against their parents? Many of their parents became ardent Nazis as well.
I don't think she's typical. I think she's actually exceptional. She became a leader in the movement and was quite articulate about kind of the emotional and political things that motivated her.
But the Hitler Youth also required people to fall into line, to almost, you know, it's kind of like almost an anti-rebellion movement. How did people like Melita Mashman react to that?
I think initially it was like summer camp. They were doing sports and recreations in the country, but they were slowly being indoctrinated and militarized, and eventually they were sacrificed. And, you know, in her diary and in the film, she reflects on that betrayal.
My guest is Matt Wolff, who's made a film called Teenage, which already has been screened in various locations, including the Tribeca Film Festival, Tribeca Film Festival?
It was at Tribeca last year, but it's opening in theaters today.
At the Landmark Sunshine and anywhere else?
It'll be opening in Los Angeles next week and expanding around the country.
Now, talk about what you did here. You found archival footage. That was the basis, and then you augmented it?
Yes, I am really interested in hidden histories. And the four characters that I profiled were never filmed, and with the exception of Brenda Dean Paul, never photographed. So I created kind of portraiture of them in the style of period home movies and newsreels.
And you used their diaries when they were available or
yes.
Other records.
Yeah, their diaries and primary sources were the basis for those portraits.
One theme that runs through much of this is jazz,
yeah.
Which is kind of surprising. Well, the Bright Young Things were interested in jazz during the jazz age. Jazz becomes very important for Americans, the swing era, despite the fact that this is a country that... where Jim Crow was in effect through much of the country, still white and black kids all got involved in swing music. And it also becomes an issue in Germany.
Yeah, swing was so fascinating to me because it was the first fully fledged youth culture. It was something that originated in, from African American music and culture. It became a youth phenomenon where young people were integrating where their parents could not. And then it became a mass media thing that spread over to Europe. But in Europe, it took on a different political dimension. And I profiled German swing kids who used American music and British fashion to subversively rebel against the Nazi regime.
And you tell this rather tragic story of a young man named Tommy Scheel.
Yes.
He was part of a group called the Hamburg Swings.
Yes,
he was. They actually called, named themselves after the music?
Yeah, absolutely. And they were a fascinating group because it's really where politics and pop culture collide. They're doing what kids do, which is partying and having fun, but they were risking their lives.
He also did something that we've seen throughout the world. He became fascinated by American popular culture. They dressed like American kids. They were listening to American music as a way of rebelling against the Nazi regime.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big theme in the film is that
happened later in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, the export of American culture. In the 1920s, we found a diary quote from a British boy that said, "My mom thought this jazz was awful noise, and she asked me why it was good, and I said, because it comes from America."
Now, you mentioned earlier the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. That was a government program to kind of get teenagers who weren't doing anything during the Depression involved?
Yeah, I mean, throughout these different periods in history, youth become perceived as a problem, and that was certainly the case during the Great Depression. No one knew what would happen with them. And so the government got involved, and Roosevelt created the CCC to put them to work.
Well, they're labor camps, in effect.
Basically, is
that a positive thing?
I don't know. It was positive in the sense that it helped young people earn money and it gave them something to do, but it was a form of control.
Now, after the war, everybody started letting loose.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept, you say, of teenager actually is formulated at this point, even though we've been dealing with these kids as teenagers?
It's at the end of World War II that the teenager as this new type of person is crystallized. And forever after, it becomes an archetype that we all know.
And then adults realize that they could treat these teens like customers and market products to them.
Yeah, instead of being a problem, youth all of a sudden becomes an opportunity. And marketers create magazines, cosmetics, clothes, records that are all targeted towards teenagers.
How does the current concept of teenager come out of that realization that you can market all these things to kids?
Really, the teenager was an American invention. It was an idea of a young person who's a democratic consumer. And that model has kind of, you know, persevered over the decades and is still the model today. Nonetheless, I think that young people are often breaking out and doing independent things that aren't commercial.
Well, your film really goes up to around 1950 or so, the first half of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Would it have been all that different, or would you be pretty much repeating motifs if you had continued through the second half of the 20th century?
Well, after the war, the amount of information on youth just expands exponentially. It would be impossible to cover this much material, and it becomes a truly global story, and it wouldn't make sense to telescope into these three countries.
Well, you'd have to do Elvis and the Beatles.
Yeah, I think I could go from like 45 to 54 in a feature film, whereas here I've covered a much broader period of time.
One other big difference is that we now have the youth culture extending into late adulthood for many people. At that time, there was a real sense of a big differentiation, a generational gap.
Yeah, I think the generation gap nowadays is actually closing. Adults want to stay young forever, and they want to be best friends with their children. It's becoming harder to define when that second stage of life ends.
Is there a lot of archival material dealing with teenagers and the transition?
Yeah, when I started this film, I didn't know how much I could cover. I was worried there'd be nothing, and I was shocked at how much there is.
From, I assume, other parts of the world as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my research focused on America, England, and Germany in the early 20th century.
And why did you pick those three places in particular? For example, you could have done the Jazz Age in America instead of the British one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm adapting a book, so I took a lot of my cues from the original text, but I felt that these competing definitions of youth were playing out most strongly in these three countries. In America, it was about democratic consumerism. In Germany, it was a model of indoctrination. And England was important because it was really the gateway of American culture into Europe.
And one of the themes that runs through it all is, the conflict is rebellion on the one hand and attempts to rein these kids in.
Yeah, and I think a larger point I'm trying to make is that teenage rebellion is often looked at as this kind of emotional rite of passage, but I think that this history proves that there's a real political substance to it and that young people have been at the front of a lot of change.
And that marketers have recognized that. That's something that we would not have seen in the 19th century or the 18th century.
Yeah, and it's a perennial cycle of young people creating new forms of expression and it being marketed back to them. But nonetheless, they always kind of, you know, pioneer the new.
Matt Wolff is the writer and director of a film called Teenage, which is based on John Savage's book, Teenage, The Creation of Youth Culture. And it opens today at the Landmark Sunshine Theater. I thank you so much for being with us. I was fascinated by especially the stuff about the Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
Amazing footage that you got there.
It's really profound.
Thanks
again.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.